Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Work takes up most of your time. That's why you should use Stamps.com to save time with your mailing and shipping and have flexibility to focus on more important things. Stamps.com can handle all your mailing and shipping needs with rates up to 88% off USPS and UPS. Add flexibility to your day with Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com/program to sign up for a special offer. No contract, cancel anytime. That's Stamps.com/program.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Bernie Pinsenot, political analyst. Bernie, Happy New Year and welcome to the show.
Hey, Happy New Year to you. Glad to be with you.
So, Bernie, there's a lot of talk in the aftermath of the election of the House Speaker, Hakeem Jeffries and others, talking about bipartisanship, but yet not one Democrat broke ranks, including our two own Congress folks, to vote for Mike Johnson as the Speaker of the House. All of that bipartisanship commentary kind of rings hollow for me.
Well, it should, because the Democrats are not going to give them a vote. They don't operate that way. They haven't in the last 30 or so years. There's nothing wrong with it. That's the path they've chosen, and they pretty much stick to it. You have to give them credit. They stick together. The Republicans primarily stuck together on this vote, but Democrats stick together. Remember the famous quote, I use it a lot, by Barack Obama when he told John McCain, losing has consequences. Well, the Democrats lost, and let's see if the Republicans treat him as such with consequences. And here in Louisiana, you look at our legislature, Democrats losing really doesn't have a lot of consequence. They're still committee chairman, and they've still this and that. But in Washington, that's the way they operate. Some people don't like it. Some people say we need less partisanship. But unfortunately, no. Yeah, we'll see how Republicans can govern. Remember, the voters. You ask people in being a pollster, do you think Congress can function? No, it can't function. It's a total mess. But do you like your congressperson? I think he or she's doing a great job. I tell people all the time. So people complain about D.C., but they like that their congressman or woman votes party line. So, it's the way it is, but you don't expect any partisanship. There may be bills that come up where it's obvious that these are popular, that they find something to agree on. But don't expect, I don't expect a lot of it.
Yeah. It just, I don't know. I mean, it wasn't like Hakeem Jeffries was going to win as the Speaker of the House. We have two Democrat-elected congresspeople that it would seem to me the interests of the state would trump the, and no pun intended, would trump the interests of a party. But I guess that's not going to happen.
Well, Trump is the ultimate phenom in the world of politics in Louisiana. I mean, nobody's ever dominated a state in the presidential elections either. I mean, remember, he got more votes in the first time he won the presidency, or maybe it was the second time when he lost, but he got more votes total himself than Rusponi and Edwards got total in the governor's race. So, yeah, he's very popular in Louisiana. He dominates pretty much, you know, if you're involved in politics in Louisiana, whether it's Jefferson Parish or Calcasieu or any place else. Most of the Republicans are pretty much Trump supporters. If they're not, yeah, they probably didn't get reelected.
Yeah. So where do we go from here? I mean, you know, we hear all of this chatter about this, and obviously with this slim margin that we have in the House, Trump takes office. Well, actually, let's talk about this first. Today, January 6th, certification of the election. I think the last four, maybe five presidential elections, there's always been folks going to the mic suggesting that we should not certify this election, both Republicans and Democrats. I think this is going on right now, actually, in D.C. I'm curious whether anyone goes to the mic and say we should not certify this election.
Well, you can do that, but what purpose would it serve? I mean, Trump didn't just win the Electoral College. He won the popular vote, and the Democrats were so sure that he wasn't that they wanted to change the Electoral College, they wanted to make it a popular vote. But one of the things that happened was Trump won the popular vote, so there wasn't a split as far as the American electorate on, you know, a majority. He got a plurality, but he still won the overall popular vote. So that really doesn't apply. That was discussed a lot in his first, when he won the first time. I think that the Republicans, you know, whether you like it or not, they have this mandate now, and Speaker Johnson had to have a lot of help from Trump to get to win this speaker or to keep it. I think it depends on their legislation, though. You know, I think if they can get behind some legislation that is meaningful, does something about bringing down the cost of living, bringing down energy costs, ramping up more law enforcement in the cities, more trust in the FBI, more trust in government in general, then you'll see the public opinion numbers for the Congress and the president all improve. When the country is sort of more united than it is, you'll see Democrats and Republicans join hands and pass legislation as meaningful. We just don't have that. The country's so divided now. And that's the challenge that Trump has, is to pass legislation and get the most of the electorate behind him with solid, successful passing of legislation that actually does something. You know, we can't keep spending money like drunken sailors. The FBI, you have to say, failed us miserably. As far as the terrorist attack in New Orleans, I guess they're starting to figure it out. But all of those things are symptomatic of, you know, the United States doesn't have a lot of confidence in its government. And that's why they chose Trump. They wanted somebody that would shake things up and try new and different ways.
Interestingly, one of the major concepts of President Trump's platform was drill, baby, drill energy. And Biden announced this morning that he will ban new offshore oil and gas drilling in more than 625 million acres of federal water under the 1953 Outer Continental Shelf Lands Act. Are they not getting the message?
I think he's on a revenge. The last few days will be punishing whatever he can, punishing whoever and whatever he can, doing just the opposite of whatever he can that's popular right now, or whatever the Republicans deem is important. He's doing whatever he can to throw up roadblocks. I'm sure there are some Democrats that like that, but it certainly doesn't help overcome what I just discussed, which is the American electorate in survey after survey just doesn't have a lot of faith and confidence in the government that it's going to solve problems. Well, being energy independent is one of them. I mean, that electric cars are wonderful, but they're not exactly catching on. We don't have the automobile manufacturers and are having a hard time with it. And by the way, if you take away the $7,500, some of my point is, yeah, we need alternative energy. But at the present time, we don't have that luxury. The people he gave the Medal of Freedom and Honor to, everything he can do right now to, like, thumb his nose at Republicans, he's obviously on a mission to do that. Newell is it's just so obvious.
And I guess that's why it's reflected in these polls that we're thinking about party over country. I mean, you know, if you elect somebody, as you said, both the Electoral College and the popular vote, and that is one of the cornerstones of his platform as it relates to energy independence. And then here on January 6th announces the banning of offshore oil and gas drilling, new offshore oil and gas drilling in 625 million acres. Yeah, obviously, with the public things, nobody really cares. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm completely frustrated by any of this. Well, and it goes both ways. I've been critical of Republicans, critical of Democrats. I mean, this is craziness what we're dealing with.
Well, that's why you have people turning away from the belief that government is a solution. Government doesn't fix problems the way we expect them to. Government, Justice Department, the military, all aspects of the budget that we're funding, the election showed. Look, you can sit there and talk about a lot of things about Trump and a lot of things that you and I would agree on that he does that we would like him not to do. But yeah, all of those things that he does and doesn't do didn't matter to the public. They just wanted a different direction, whether he's been indicted or whether he's been accused of this. No matter what the charges against him were, the vast majority of people in the United States voted for Trump because they wanted something different. Now, he's totally different, but he did walk around saying, I'm going to fix the problems, instead of, while they were talking about Trump, he was talking about fixing problems. So there is a cry out by the voters in the United States that government isn't working the way they would like it to work. They don't see it fixing problems, that law and order, all of the what you would say is the most important issues that face America today. The public spoke loud and clear that they may not like all aspects of Trump, but they believe that he will do a better job to fix the problems. Now, they're placing a lot of trust in him, and he has about a year and a half to get as much accomplished as he can. After, you know, all presidents, after 18 months or so, they start running out of energy. Hopefully he can even change that, but it's very important the first year that he accomplished a lot as far as the government and do something about problems that remain unfixable, like the debt, like printing money, like inflation. Those are things that the public expects results from elected leaders, and you and I know, as watchers of this for a long time, we just don't see it. We don't see it the way we expect it.
Well, the value of delay tactics, obviously, when you know you have a one-term president because he can't run for a second term, and a lot of folks did not, still to this day, don't realize that, becomes increasingly valuable for Democrats, right?
Well, that's one of the things that, of course, the Democrats will do, block anything and everything. The longer they can delay him having any type of success, the more he'll be bogged down in minutia and controversy. They're counting on the Republicans not to get their act together. They're counting on the Republicans to make mistakes. They're counting on the Republicans to continue with the infighting. So all of those things are on the table for Democrats, and they're not going to. You know, there are a lot of people out there that will agree with what I'm saying who are Democrats and don't like Trump. They expect him to be the resistance. They expect him to stop changes that he wants to make that is against their agenda. So all of those forces are working against Trump, and they're not any lesser than they've ever been. What you and I think is that on his second attempt at running the government, he's a lot smarter on what works and what doesn't work and who you can trust and who you can't. Those are the things that we think we're seeing with cabinet appointments. But it's going to take all of that and all the skills and all the Republicans pulling together. The Democrats don't have zero problem pulling together when they win. They pass pretty much what they want and get what they want, but they stick together. Where the Republicans, you know, sit around arguing about minutia details instead of looking at a big picture. And that's the big question that we'll find out in the first 90 days of the Republicans in power.
Bernie, you've been around a long time. When we think about DOGE, the Department of Governmental Efficiency, I'm a little concerned that may end up being a big distraction in many respects. Your thoughts?
I think it's how you try to accomplish it. The word waste is easy to apply to any type of spending. It depends on, you know, what you're spending it on and who gets it and who doesn't. I think they have to have the scope fairly narrow, and I think they have to go after things that produce money where there is a consensus that this isn't needed. It's outdated. The money, you know, you can't justify it. Taking on all of the government probably is what you're worried about, because there are so many functions that the average person doesn't understand the ramifications of cutting it. So when you're talking about cutting government waste or cutting the fat, it's not that easy. It's very difficult. You hear a lot of talk of that in Louisiana, but with the Republicans in charge now, I haven't seen in the last year the governor has a committee now to look at fraud, waste, and abuse, and hopefully they'll find something. But during the last session, the Republicans didn't give a lot of discussion about cutting the budget. The same thing applies to Trump and him. I think you need to limit the scope, and you need success to show that it does help, and then you take on new targets. But you can't take a big approach, because, as you know, having worked in government, you can talk about any kind of spending as wasteful, but it depends on who's getting the money. Yeah. As to what interest group is going to fight you. Correct.
Right. Yeah. Show me the money.
Show me the money.
For sure. As always, Bernie Pensinat, truly appreciate your time, your insight. Thank you so much for joining us today, and have a great week.
Okay, Neil, thank you. Talk to you all
thank
later.
You,
have a great new year.
We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870. When we come back, we'll visit with Arthur Hardy, editor and publisher of the Mardi Gras Guide. We'll talk about potential changes to Mardi Gras from a security perspective.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Imagine uncovering the secrets that others missed. A hidden clue, a silent witness, a twist that changes everything. I'm Carter Roy, host of Murder True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Join me every Tuesday as we dive into a famous solved or unsolved murder case. Follow and listen to Murder True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Stay with us. So the season starts today, and joining us is Arthur Hardy, editor and publisher of the Mardi Gras Guide. Arthur, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Newell. About 30 seconds ago, we just wrapped up the mayor's annual kickoff to Mardi Gras 12th night celebration, and it was quite an event today.
Arthur, there's been a lot of speculation that in the aftermath of the terrorist attack on New Year's Day on Bourbon Street, that there would be conversations about upcoming events to include not only conventions, obviously the Super Bowl, but maybe Mardi Gras as well. But I've not really heard much from anyone in that regard. Your thoughts? All right, I think we lost Arthur there real quick. We'll try and get him back. There's been a lot of discussion about whether or not there's going to be discussion amongst the crews with NOPD and others, LSP and others, about whether or not there would be any security measures that would change or alter the manner in which we conduct Mardi Gras. And as soon as we get Arthur back on the line, we'll talk about that. It's right here. I mean, it's not far away. There's not many days between now and then. And obviously, this evening, I think, is the first crew that will be marching through the streets of our city for Mardi Gras. And we now have Arthur back. Arthur, I don't know if you heard my question, but your thoughts.
Yeah. Yes, I did. There has been, we've heard a lot of conversation, but the mayor assured everybody Mardi Gras would go on, didn't mention any changes, except that she has asked the powers that be to declare Mardi Gras level one event, which brings in more national resources in terms of safety control and all. Your Super Bowl is a number one tier event. I guess it's probably the inauguration. There are various levels of Homeland Security activity, and she feels certain that that's going to be granted, which is good. And, you know, I think this may be the safest Mardi Gras ever from this tragedy and then all of the extra measures for Super Bowl. I think it's going to be a safe Mardi Gras and a big one and normally a late one has better crowds, better weather. So I'm optimistic about it. That being said, you know, no one is pretending we didn't have a tragedy here a few days ago. And this ceremony this morning was certainly not somber, but it was less celebratory than it usually is. You know, you have to balance between the terrible things that happened and the fact that you can't surrender. You know, the show must go on. And it was a very pleasant morning, and the mayor said it's okay to be sad, but not for long. You know, we've got to get up and do what we do.
Well, otherwise the terrorists win for certain. This level one right. request designation, that's not a new request. It's been made before, right?
It has, but I don't think we've ever gotten higher than the second level. But this year, I think, in light of all this, and we're just projecting here, but she seemed to indicate she thought it would be likely to happen.
And do you think that maybe that might be an announcement that President Biden, who's visiting the city this afternoon, might make?
Well, that's certainly possible. She didn't indicate that, certainly, but I guess that could happen. Another significant occurrence, Newell, at today's event was James Reese, who's the co-chair of the Mayor's Mardi Gras Advisory Council, announced that all of the parades this year, and there are 33 of them in Orleans Parish, would be dedicated to the victims and the survivors and families of the New Year's Day tragedy. So that's, I think, a wonderful gesture. And, you know, we're not going to forget what happened. But, again, we've got to go on. You know, we choose to celebrate rather than surrender.
Some crew captains have talked about limiting traffic on the north side of St. Charles Avenue that runs from downtown to uptown that has historically been open to traffic. Have you heard any conversation about that?
Not today, but I've heard, you know, backroom chatter about it, and that it may be time for that. You know, New, being in law enforcement, it's virtually impossible to guarantee safety along a several-mile, several-hour correct route. It's impossible. But we can do our best to make sure things like this don't happen. But sadly, there's evil in the world, and somebody will find a way if they want to badly enough, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and when you think about the expansive nature of Mardi Gras and how many different festivities, separate and apart from the crew itself, right, Arthur? I mean, there's so many other festivities that are going on there that are just kind of contemporaneous and people doing it on their own, right, in so many areas of the city during the course of Mardi Gras.
There are a lot of opportunities for bad things to happen, and I think we've been lucky, but we have to be careful, too. And I just think with all the attention, focus on safety now, like I said, it might be the best one ever. And we've got a lot of stuff happening tonight. You know, the streetcar rides with the Funny 40 Fellows and the funky uptown crew that follows them. This Society of Leisure Fields or whatever it's called, I never can get it quite right. They've been snake bit. They used to ride the St. Claude streetcar, but that was down for 4 years because of Hard Rock. Got up for 1 year. Now it's down again. So they're just going to celebrate the street around Legion Fields of St. Claude. But they do a neat thing today under the Calio overpass, that they do some activities with the homeless, giving them backpacks, food, treats in it. And so we see a lot of Mardi Gras crews do more than just have fun. You know, they do good. And then the big parade tonight at the Joan of Arc is the biggest parade they've ever had. New route starting and ending on Decatur and, excuse me, on Barracks and French Marketplace, and they're starting at 8 o'clock, which is later than usual. And all of that have been in the works for a long time, but just so happens tonight at 6 o'clock, the Archbishop has a special interfaith ceremony at the cathedral where Joan of Arc will pass, but, you know, a couple hours later, so they won't interfere with each other. And I've talked with the captain, and all systems are go. And that's what we want. We want things to be as usual and normal and traditional as they can.
Arthur, obviously, you know, there's been a lot of chatter about the state of the economy and alike, and any rumblings about where people stand with riders and registration for Mardi Gras 2025?
What inflation. That's what the group captain say. Sells more stuff than ever. Membership is higher than it's ever been. I'm serious. It's almost like this celebration is inflation and depression proof,
which is kind of unusual, because it has in the past been impacted, right?
Yeah, it has, but I think people so much need to celebrate, and we wait all year for this, you know, and I don't see any decline at all. You know, the big crews have gotten bigger. We have more crews with more than 1,000 members, and I mean, the question now is, has it gotten too big? The parade's too long. It's an embarrassment of riches, and you could make an argument for that, that maybe we need to scale it back just a little bit. Not necessarily limit how many members of floats, but how many units in a parade. There are ordinances in place that are never enforced that address that. And speaking of ordinances, the new one that's going to ban tents and grills and canopies from the parade route, that's going to be, I think, the story of the year. Can it be enforced? How hard will we try? What will the repercussions be? Because it will really change the viewer's experience of parades.
You know, it's always been a challenge for Mardi Gras crews passing on the traditions from generation to generation, leadership roles in crews. What sense do you get as to where most crews stand in that regard?
Well, that's always a question. You know, who's going to take over when the captain decides to retire or dies? But there seems to be a succession plan in most crews. It's a thankless and tough and non-paying job for the most part for crew captains. I mean, nobody has to do any of this stuff. Let's face it.
Right.
This is all volunteer. They're a nonprofit organization. You know, it's a labor of love, but you do wonder about what happens next. But we've got a waiting list of new crews that want to come in, at least in Orleans Parish. And like I said, I don't think Mardi Gras has ever been healthier than it is right now.
Well, that's good to hear, because that's always a big challenge for organizations like that, you know, to carry on that tradition. And that's why I asked the question, because you said that, you know, the membership is better than it's ever been. And that would be, I guess, reflective of they're not really having that problem, which is great news.
It really is. Leadership is everything, and the good leaders, you know how to delegate. And it's a remarkable thing we pull off each year. You try to explain this to out-of-towners, and I speak at conventions and have traveled around, you know, spreading the Mardi Gras gospel, and people just shake their heads and say, there's no business model for this. You know, you spend all this money to give away stuff to strangers, and then it's over, and you start over for next year. Who does that? We do.
Yeah, we got these people standing up there just throwing $1 bills.
Yeah, I mean, look, you've ridden, you know a lot of people who ride. I don't know anybody.
I ride every year.
Yeah, I don't know anybody that spends under, you know, $800, $900, or $1,000 on throws, and then you got dues, and then, you know, come on. It's an expensive business to be in, to have fun and spread joy and give gifts to strangers, you know?
Absolutely. You know, it really is. I'd love to hear one of your presentations to a convention where people are just kind of looking at you like, what the hell is this guy talking about?
I was explaining the king cake tradition, and one guy raised his hand. He said, you know, it sounds like a National Enquirer headline. Man finds a baby fried cake and declares himself king. Yeah, that's what we do.
Oh, man. You know, it's really refreshing to hear such good news about the health of Mardi Gras moving forward. You always kind of wonder. It's always a big challenge. You know, folks that are on the outside looking in don't really understand how difficult it is to put a parade on and how much work it actually takes. I mean, it truly is a labor of love.
Yeah, the logistics are phenomenal. And then, that's just for the people putting it on. What about the police and EMS and sanitation and all the ancillary services that without which you couldn't have a parade? You know, so it's a big business, but it's more than that. You know, I think it's what makes one of the things that makes us special.
Well, I was a little concerned that we weren't going to take a breath, that we maybe might react emotionally to the response to this tragic occurrence on New Year's Day, you know, and that we would overreact and in many cases just do it emotionally without having the data and really thinking about what it is that we're doing. And someone put it well, you want to make sure that whatever you do is actually making people safe, not just feel safe. That's really about safety, right? And it seems as though that may be where we are right now, which is great news.
Can't just look good. You have to do good. You know, a friend of mine told me, after somebody drowns, do you close the pool and fill it with concrete, or do you get more lifeguards? You know, and I think we're taking the more lifeguard approach that okay, can any good come from this? Can we learn anything to make other celebrations safer? And hopefully we can, knowing that they never can be 1,000%, you know, safe. Nothing can.
Absolutely. Arthur Hardy, as always, truly enjoy the conversation with you. Thank you so much for the time and the insight. And you're in the midst of your season, baby. Enjoy it.
I'm ready, Lou. Let's go do it, man. I'll be down there tonight.
All righty. Thank you so much, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. You know, it was really refreshing to hear what Arthur Hardy was talking about. I was a little concerned that there might be somewhat of an overreaction. And I think we should look at what we do every year. I know that we used to engage in that exercise, and I'm sure that Sheriff Joe Lapinto still continues that into the future as to how we can best improve the security measures that we deployed, the placement of barriers, whether Jersey barriers, barricades, or others, working with the crews and alike. And one of the concerns that I had is that, you know, we would try to adopt a one-size-fits-all approach to Mardi Gras parades. I think that would be very difficult. They're different in their own right. Historically, they have had other, you know, routes. I think the much better approach would be to evaluate the route and just make it safer and figure out how we deploy what equipment that we have and what assets that are necessary for those crews. Obviously, Mardi Gras is a big economic driver for our economy here in New Orleans and in the greater New Orleans area and throughout the state of Louisiana, quite frankly. And it's something that we should manage and massage very carefully with whatever we decide to do, taking into consideration the investment made by the members of these crews and the amount of time that they're actually able to be out on the street parading. We need to be mindful of that as well. It's like everything else. You want a return on your investment. You don't want your ride to be 45 minutes or an hour. It's hard to get people to spend the amount of money that they spend for that short of an experience. I know that we always timed ourselves in Jefferson Parish to make sure and ensure that the crews were out on the streets at a minimum of 3 hours out there, because that seemed to be the sweet spot for folks as they ride a crew and make the investment that they make. And the same thing for the audience and the folks that are out there that attend the parades. They're not going to go out there for a 45-minute gig. Obviously, the city is not burdened with that challenge as much as the outlying areas, because they have multiple crews on multiple nights going one after the other. So they're able to deliver that experience. And I think that's very much played to the success of Mardi Gras in the city of New Orleans. And it's why, you know, we have the report like Arthur Hardy just provided about the health of Mardi Gras and the Mardi Gras crews. You know, the cost, everything is the costs are going up for the super crews and the like, and the smaller crews as well. And they each have to deal with the challenges that they have. But it's something that we need to make sure that we manage very carefully and thoughtfully, quite frankly, because it is something that is incredibly unique to our city. I mean, there's no one else really does it to the magnitude that we do, not even close. And, you know, so it, as I said before, it's something that we should make sure that we consider all that Mardi Gras has to offer before there are any challenges, and I mean changes. And I hope that whatever changes may be made are made with, you know, data supports it, right? Evidence that supports this change, not change for the sake of change to think that we're trying to make people feel safe, but it's not really safer. And look, I mean, you assume a lot of risk just as you drive around in any particular location in this country, depending on what you participate in public spaces or otherwise. There's an assumption of risk there as well. We need to put these things in the proper context, especially as it relates to a terrorist. Because as we're finding out about this particular terrorist, there was a lot of forethought and planning going into what he actually did. And I think more and more, as we find out more and more, we're recognizing, albeit this was not a very sophisticated attack. It doesn't need to be, right, in order to accomplish the message that you're trying to accomplish. But there was planning by this lone wolf. And I think a lot of folks are surprised by the breadth and depth of what he actually looked at and his little intelligence gathering exercise that he went through in preparation for SANE, which makes it even more difficult to minimize the risk of any particular activity where you're bringing together a collection of folks, 50 or more, on any piece of geography throughout the city. And as long as we put these things in their appropriate context, whatever we put in place will be, I think, more meaningful. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. When we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We'll talk about a number of issues, the breach at the U.S. Treasury at the hand of Chinese-backed hackers and what that means, the crisis in New Orleans downtown office building, dynamic pricing and what that means. A lot of people don't know what that means, and you're going to want to listen to that conversation because that is something that's a phenomenon that's very interesting, and we'll see where that ultimately leads. We'll also talk about most recently, as of this morning, Biden's ban on oil and gas drilling in more than 625 million acres of federal waters. Obviously, striking a blow against the cornerstone of the platform of President-elect Donald Trump. We'll be right back.